Hello, 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 hello. This is Princeton Holt.
Hey.
And I want to welcome all of you to the show today. I have a tremendous guest on our show today. As many of you know, we have started this global radio station to really be effective in getting the gospel out to people during the time when they're sequestered and cannot get to church. I do believe that everybody has a story to tell, as I always open up my show. Everybody's life is a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Everybody's on their way somewhere, and they're encountered by a villain who tries to circumvent them from getting to where they want to go. There's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of successes and failures. And a lot of times these stories that people have can do a whole lot in terms of inspiring others who are on their journey in life as well. I have as my guest today, Pastor Anthony Lewis. I want to say hi, Anthony. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Pastor, man. Fine, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing extremely well. You're down in Florida, I understand.
Yes, I'm in Orlando, Florida, man. I am in Orlando, Florida, in the warm weather, much warmer than, of course, New York and the North.
Don't rub it in. Don't rub it in. Let me give you a little brief introduction here. Tony, you were born in Florida. You attended Oakwood College. You studied psychology and theology. Went to Andrews University, where you got a Master's of Divinity. You passed it in Lake Region Conference. You served as publishing director in that conference. You had the joy of being able to serve in South Africa. And now you're currently pastoring a church in Florida. The name of the church is the Ray of Light Advent Ministry, married to the wonderful Ed Renee, three
yes.
Beautiful children.
Absolutely.
And one grandchildren. Or one grandchild. God bless
That's
you,
right.
sir.
That's right. That's right.
Well, how's the family doing?
The family's doing well, man. Thank you for inquiring and being concerned. All is well. We're doing everything everybody else is doing, trying to stay healthy, stay out of the way of what's going on in the world. But we are otherwise blessed and we're good, Pastor.
How's the ministry going?
Ministry is going phenomenal. God is good.
He's okay. That's tremendous to be able to say at a time like this, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I've come up with a new word, man. I try to find adjectives to describe God, and my vocabulary is limited. So I just say, man, God is just blessed-tastic.
Yeah,
blessed-tabulous. I have to find other words. Then.
Amen, amen, amen. All right, I want to get into your life, Ed, Tony. We all have some great things to testify to God about. Tell me what it was like growing up a Lewis.
Listen, I come from a very small town in South Florida, I'm 63 now, so you can get context of when I grew up, born in 57, where there was segregation and all of that. And my family, I come from the Parks family. That's my mother's maiden name. They came from Georgia, and down in Hope Sound, Florida, it was a community that was created to a Black community exclusively to serve the rich, wealthy people on Jupiter Island. Mm. So my little small town was only a mile and a half away, maybe two, from millionaires.
You know what, Tony? We're going to have to start again, man. I apologize. I didn't put it on record, okay?
Okay.
And you were getting ready to go into a Doc Deep. You would be inspiration. Let me go ahead and start the record button, and then I'll introduce you again. I apologize.
Used to work on Jupiter Island, one of the most wealthiest zip codes in the United States, even to this day. And we were the butlers, the maids, the cooks, you name it, the nannies, the garden, keeping the gardens. And that's where I was born. So we were only a mile and a half or 2 miles away from tremendous wealth. The Reynolds with the aluminum company, the Hunts with the ketchup, the you name Hershey's, all of those Bush, those were names that were out on the front of the yards, and they still own the property to this day. But that's where I was born and raised.
Okay, so what was it like in the household?
The Parks family was one of the first families that ever had a a business, their own business. We had a garbage sanitation business at that time, a garbage collection business. So my family as a whole was revered and respected. But I was the oldest son, second oldest child, but the oldest son. And I've worked all my life, Pastor, all my life. I've missed a childhood because I've worked since the age of 8 or 9. I mean, like work, you know. So I missed a childhood, but I had to help bring, as they say, bring home the bacon to help my mom, because my mother, it was single, but she had 7 kids. And all of us kind of have different, all of us just about have different fathers.
Mm-hmm. So, well, yeah, what kind of relationship did you have with your siblings? I mean, was it a healthy relationship? Was it a fractured relationship?
Very good. No, very wonderful. Even though we had different fathers, it was good. We leaned on each other. We depended upon each other. I have 3 brothers, 3 sisters on my mother's side from a mom. And we have great relationships.
So you didn't really grow up at that time. When did you come? Did you come up and spend most of your life in Chicago?
No, in fact, quickly, I ended up, my dad, I never saw my dad until I was around 15 years old. Never laid eyes on him, never seen a picture of him. And then but I spoke to him a couple of times on the phone over the years, just maybe once a year. But one day he showed up in Hope Sound, Florida, just showed up, no pre-announced nothing, and came up and said, "I'm your dad from Detroit." From Detroit, he came down from Detroit. He says, "I'm your dad," and oh man, of course I was excited about it. And how I ended up north is that summer he asked me to come up if I wanted to stay with him, Pastor, and I did. I enjoyed it. Went back to Hope Sound, Florida, and then I think maybe 6 months later he said, "Look, do you want to come and stay?" And I took up that offer, and that's how I ended up in Detroit, Michigan. That's okay. How I ended up in the North.
Okay. Now, you say you were 15 years old at the time?
About 15 when I ever, okay. First time I ever saw my dad, yes.
Now, let me ask you, what kind of, in moving to Detroit, did you find yourself getting involved in things in Detroit that you did not expose yourself to when you were living in the South?
You are certainly a prophet indeed, because mm-hmm. You hit it right on the head. Man, little small sleepy town, segregated in South. Now I'm up in Detroit, Michigan in 72, 73-ish kind of. And man, I'm seeing people with big, nice cars. I'm seeing pimps, man, and prostitutes and drugs and gangs. And I mean, you know, boats, man, and diamond in the back and sunroof top. I was fascinated by that. That lifestyle, I was a loop. Just fascinated by it. And slowly I was drawn into that, even though I always kept a job and had a 9-to-5 with my dad, but still on my spare time, brother, I was out in the streets, man.
So what kind of relationship did you have with your father? Did he know he was getting involved in that kind of lifestyle?
Slowly, surely, yeah. He was very perceptive, but he was rarely ever home. He had 2 jobs, 2 full 8-time jobs. 8-hour jobs, 2 full-time 8-hour jobs. And any spare time he had, he was out gambling and hanging out. So I rarely had a chance to really know him.
Were you the only child in the home at the time?
Only son, okay. By my mother. And he had 2 daughters, young daughters, okay. That were younger than me, like 4 or 5 years younger than myself, in Detroit. And so we still are connected to this day and a very good relationship, but yeah, he had his own daughters at that time. But I never saw my dad, man. And then of course I started going to the gambling houses and halls with him.
Yeah.
That was a way of you know, training his son, you know.
Okay. Now, you were in high school at the time, were you not?
I was in high school. I ended up going to high school, but then I ended up dropping out of high school, Pastor, in the 10th grade. That was the last grade I completed. And I ended up dropping out of high school because I got involved with gang activity, and somebody robbed me from another gang. It was an intra robbery. I knew the persons who robbed me, and they stuck me up with a sawed-off shotgun, took my drugs, shot at me, and I ended up going home to get my gun to go after them, and my stepmother I don't want to use the word freak out, but you know, she really, and what ended up happening is that that gang chasing after gang, my parents said, you can't stay here, bringing that activity here. So I intended to go back down to Florida to finish school, but I never got back in school. So I was a high school dropout.
Mm-hmm. So how deep did you get into that culture?
Pretty deep, elder, not pastor, not like, you know, being a leader or anything like that. It was a convenience kind of thing, looking for, being a longing. But to the extent that I was on my way to being shot, killed, most of my friends are dead or in prison. And that's just not a cliche, for real. Yeah. I don't know if I can go back and find a guy in Detroit that I grew up with. Yeah. Teenager, they're dead or either in life sentences in prison. Mm. So I was pretty headed down that road, and that's where the Lord came into my life right when I dropped out of school, because there was a window of opportunity in my mind that said, the Holy Spirit says, you got to do something. Mm-hmm. You know, you're either going to do this, die, killed, or and that's when the Lord spoke to me, and I ended up coming into the church. Right during that time, and it changed my life forever.
Well, I know you just didn't just come in. Was there somebody who influenced you, whether a crusade or some kind of event that happened?
My stepmother was a Catholic and, a devout, wonderful woman, wonderful Catholic. And my stepmother actually had become like a mother to me. And like my real mother. And she came into the church through Catherine Bland, doing the evangelistic Bible work for Elder Graham, an evangelist. And sure enough, I ended up coming into the church because they bugged me and bugged me and bugged me about coming to the revival. They just bugged me, Pastor, come. So I just to get them off my back, I said, okay, I'll go one night. I'll go. And man, I went that night and I'd never heard a preaching like that. I'd never heard the gospel come forth like that, Pastor. And it just really blew my mind. In fact, I had long they call them dreads now, but braids in my hair, man. It was all down on my shoulder when I went to the service that night, because I had a big afro. But man, by that third night of hearing the gospel, I came to Christ. And the one thing that brought me in, Pastor, was this. He said at the end of that crusade, I only attended about four nights because they were near the end. He said, if God does not manage your life better than you have managed your own, I give this to go back to whatever you was doing. That was his appeal. If God does not change your life and do a better job at managing your life than you've done, of course, my life was a mess. He said, I give you permission to just go. I wouldn't even follow the Lord. I'd go back to doing whatever I was doing. And sure enough, man, I said, well, no, that's a great proposition. That's a wonderful offer. And I did. And man, I haven't turned back since.
So what happened after the conversion? After you were baptized, you did not go immediately to college, did you? What was it? What was your journey since or right after your conversion?
After my conversion, I went to the military. But I didn't stay in the military very long. I really did not, just a few months. And then I had some issues with the Sabbath, actually. I was promised one thing and they didn't give me that. I wanted to go in as a medic and they did promise me that. But a long story short, man, they ended up threatening to court-martial me for refusing orders. Mm-hmm. Now I realized later that it was only a bluff. They would have had to do whatever they promised me. But at that time, I was a nuisance. And so after a few months, I came back home. But then I said I wanted to go to college, man. But my stepmother said, well, look, in order to go to college, you need a high school diploma. I said, really? Is that what you got to have to go to college? So I ended up getting my GED. And after the GED, I ended up at Oakwood College. I ended up at Oakwood College, Pastor, because there was a Message magazine that was sponsoring Oakwood College with some students, man, sitting at, around the bell tower and, posing. And I said, man, I want to go to this place right here. And stepmother said, you got to have a high school diploma to get to college. And so I said, well, okay, I'll get. And so I took my GED test, passed it. And after working for a year at Chrysler Corporation, which was a sought after job in those days.
Without a doubt.
Told my dad after a year and a couple of months, I said, man, when I get my first year of tuition or a car, I'm going to Oakwood College. My father thought I'd lost my mind. Son, you leave Chrysler? Are you crazy to go off to college? I mean, that was their thinking back then. This is a solid job. And that's how I ended up at Oakwood, man. I worked a year and a couple of months. And guess what? I ended up driving down to Oakwood College, man, with a trunk full of stuff, my clothes, and went off on my own, brother.
What was your experience at Oakwood like? What were some of the highlights at Oakwood?
An experience out of this world. I had never been around that kind of environment. Young people, inspired, motivated, energy, man, you know, I'm used to the streets.
Yeah.
So all was new to me, man. And I just loved it. It was a whole new world for me.
Did anybody stand out in terms of influencing your life? Somebody you really admired there at Oakwood?
The teachers, to be honest with you, Dr. Benjamin Reeves, C. Richards, these were male figures. I later learned, realized why I gravitated to them, because, I mean, there weren't very many female teachers in the religious department or the psychology department, for that matter, because I have a degree in theology and psychology. But man, it was those guys. I just admired their spirituality, their command of the class, the respect that they garnished. I just never saw anything quite like that. So it was the teachers for the most part.
Yeah. Who were your closest friends there at Oakwood?
Cool Ron from Philadelphia was my friend because I can identify with him. He was a street guy from Philly, hadn't been converted that long. Glided around the campus, man. I mean, you know, forgive the analogy, like a pimp, you know, smooth, you know, that's cool, Ron. That's what, in fact, that's what we called him. And I gravitated to him. And I ended up, because of tuition, rising cost of tuition, I was on campus at first, and I ended up going off campus, and I stayed with Ron at what was known as Tent City. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, Tent, I remember very well, certainly.
Oh man, yeah, nothing but tin roofs and leaking when it rains and all of that. And he allowed me to stay on his couch. And so Cool Ron, man, became one of my best friends because I could identify with him.
Yeah, and then you went to Andrews.
Then I went to Andrews. I graduated, married my last year at Oakwood, married my last year at Oakwood. I couldn't even wait to marry this woman until I got out of college. I said, "Now I better get it while I can."
Yeah, that's good.
I ended up marrying her in my senior year. We just lived in the master's in theology and psychology. And the choice was to go and get a master's in psychology or either go to the seminary. But I wasn't picked up. I wasn't sponsored.
Okay.
And so Lake Region came down, gave some interviews. And like in those days, everybody else trying to get before the president to be interviewed, somebody set an interview up for me, and I got interviewed, and it was an interesting interview, but I got interviewed and got hired and sponsored. That's how I ended up at
Oakland. And who was the president at the time?
Charlie Joe.
Okay. All right. Now, when you left Andrews, what was your journey like? What happened after you left?
I got to Andrews. I left Andrews and was one of those up and coming pastors. You know, you remember, yeah, you were in Lake Region when I was hired there. One of those kind of the new breed of pastors, cream of the crop. They're going to change the way ministry is done. And so I ended up, man, going to where was that? Muncie, Marion, Indiana. It was like a no man's land. God blessed us tremendously there. We baptized, man, folk that had never been, just never done that before. And then after going there for about 2 years, I ended up following you, I believe, in East St. Louis, Illinois. You guys had just purchased that one lovely building, man, on State Street. Beautiful building you guys purchased.
You know, when I first went to East St. Louis, they had this little church called Reed Memorial. And in the afternoon when we had youth meetings, the rats, R-A-T-S,
yes,
would come
yes.
out and run around the communion table every single Sabbath. And I made up my mind that we were going to get, now that building, that beautiful building became available. Of course, it was out of our reach. Of course, there were just a few members in the church, But God bless us, and we were able to buy that building. It's tremendously one of the most beautiful churches in the city.
It is, man. I mean, you're right, man. It's hard. A beautiful, man. That oak and mahogany, and it was well built, and it is still beautiful to this day.
Yes.
But I followed you. I don't know how long you had been in the building before when I came. Maybe about a year.
Yeah, about a year.
And then I followed you, man, and it was wonderful. But after that, I ended up going to Detroit to pastor the very same church that I was baptized in, like your family church. That doesn't happen too often, but I was able to pastor my family church, Conant Garden Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Okay.
While there, they asked me would I be the publishing director of the Lake Region Conference.
Pastor. Now, why? What were you doing there, Conant Gardens, that motivated the president to ask you to become the publishing director of the conference?
Because I was a publishing, I did call portering and selling books at Oakwood. That's how I worked my way through school.
Okay.
That's how I became familiar with that field. And they knew that I was a by their standards, a good pastor and would have a great relationship with the members and the other pastors. And I had call portering experience, extensive call portering experience, 3 years of it. And that's why they asked me. But I turned it down twice. I turned it down twice, Pastor. I said, no, you know, it's too much traveling. And me and my family, you know, my kids were young. But at that third time, Barbara, the then current publishing director, died. And this man, they twisted my arm and I'll give you whatever you need. But you'd have to move from Detroit to Chicago. And I accepted that position. Pastor, let me tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
You should not accept every offer that is an upward promotion. You got to consult God. Now, I'm not saying I didn't pray. I'm saying, man, is that it was one of the that's when my issues started.
Okay.
When I accepted that position and ended up going to Chicago, I should have never, first of all, I was young. Being promoted too fast, man, without going through the steps. I realized that God takes you, man, step by step. He did not take them straight to the promised land because the children of Israel, man, had some things to learn.
Yeah.
Are you with me? And I turned it down twice, and I should have turned it down a third time. But I did accept it finally, and I ended up becoming the publishing director and pastoring a church while in Chicago.
Okay. That's amazing, man, that you come to the conclusion that you should be very prayerful and not jump into elevated positions because they are elevated positions and not be ready for it. And that's a good conclusion. So tell me what it was like in Chicago.
Oh, man, another fast city, wonderful city. Of course, the difference is that I'm in the Lord now rather than being in Detroit initially and not knowing Christ, except when I went back to pastor. That's my wife's hometown. She is from Chicago, which is where you remembered about the Chicago connection. Mm-hmm. She is born and raised in Chicago. I love the city. We moved over there, Pastor. And I hate the cold weather. I hate Detroit. I hate cold weather, period. Chicago and Detroit. But we toughed it out and all went well, man. A lot of work, you know, bringing up the publishing department, but all went well until Pastor.
Yeah. Now I had a talk with you before coming on the show today, and there were some missteps that you encountered, and you stated that you were not afraid to go there in terms of explaining and telling us exactly what happened. If you don't mind sharing that, you had gone down to the southern part of the country and you had gotten involved in a bank robbery. Can you tell me, if you don't mind sharing with us, exactly how and what led up to that?
No, not a problem, Pastor. It's really a testimony to me rather than a traumatic experience. It was traumatic at the time, but man, it's a triumph and a testimony rather than trauma. Okay. And traumatic. Really, God has turned it around. But very, very quickly, what happened is, Pastor, you stole my thunder and said what I ended up doing, because it doesn't, how do you go from pastor to prison? How do you end up being a very elevated, up and coming, sought after for a week of prayers and revivals and youth congresses and all of that. And in the publishing work, you know, which is a great position to have. I think I was the youngest person in the office at that time. But it was a lot of pressure, Pastor. A lot of things were going on in Lake Region at that time, a lot of things. And sometimes you don't realize how things impact you when you're in the midst of it, in the middle of the storm. You don't realize, man, that the storm is torn your shirt off, you know, and the tornado has, you know, done some damage to you until you look in the mirror and you say, wow. But what happened, Pastor, is that
Before you go on with that, you said there were a lot of things going on, a lot of pressure going on in Lake Region. What were some of the pressures that affected you? Now, you don't have to get into personalities. Uh-huh. But of course, the pressures that you were going through affected you in some way. And I would assume even some of those pressures was relatively, or shall I say, in some way responsible for the elevation of things that happened in your life. Now, if I'm wrong, correct me.
No. You're spot on. At that time, the Lake Region Conference was a torn, and it's ironic that what I see in the country now between two parties and two sections, portions of people, I see that, and that was in Lake Region. There was a split between somebody in favor of and somebody didn't want this and another group wanted that, and both groups were very strong about it. I happened to be on the executive committee at that time. I happened to be one who was in favor of the person who was in office at that time, and there were folks who were trying. So it was a lot going on, and as a youngster, man, I saw all of that. But then, Pastor, I also saw, I'm not sure how candid you want me to be on this show, but I also saw how the human element can get involved as it relates to ministers, people promising you things and bribing you. If you do this, if you vote this way, if you do that, we'll give you this church and, you know, we'll give you this and that and the other. I mean, it was a lot. And I was a young 30-year-old, I believe, at that time, man, 28 to 30 years old, if my memory serves me correctly. And I just got caught up, man, in all of the pressure, trying to stay focused. The GC and others, the upper body of the church, for those who may not know the structure of our church, they were also trying to push out the current president. And I thought I was staying, and I still believe to this day, that I was principled, and I wasn't willing to compromise my principle in order to get something done. Whatever's be done is going to be done, but done the right way. And I stood my ground. Well, all of that pressure, man, all of those secret meetings, Pastor, it kind of impacted me. And I lost confidence in what I thought the ministry should be, how I thought ministers should behave. Mm. So it got to the point, Pastor, where I wanted to resign from ministry. I tried to go overseas first as a missionary. And my wife and I, for whatever reason, I can't remember why, we didn't go through with that. Then I was considering going back into the military to be a chaplain, inspired by Chaplain Barry Black, and then or just simply become a counselor at a school or something down south. I just got tired and fed up with all the competition. Yeah. I got all of the backstabbing, and it was real. I'm not trying to paint a bad picture. Brush on it. It was just real. And I said, man, I don't want to be any part of this. So I became disenchanted.
Yeah. But you see what, Tony, many times people only see the end result, never really understanding what went on into a person making the kinds of decisions that they make. And you're telling this story as a backdrop.
Yes.
From the beginning of things gives a lot of clarity in terms of how things ultimately ended up. But go ahead and finish your story.
No problem. So I had a friend of mine who is a pastor. I will not name any names. I've never named any names in this testimony, but they're a pastor. And they recognized that I was disenchanted, and they offered to help me. They offered to help me. And so I said, okay, no problem. I want to just go down south and just chill out, man, and just, you know, kind of get out from all of this pressure that I'm under. And so he called me one day, Pastor, and said, look, I was still the publishing director. I was still traveling a lot. I went from Detroit to Chicago a lot, doing training and event in literary evangelism. And one day this person asked me to collect some money for him. And I said, no problem. Not knowing anything about what the money was for. I didn't know this story around it, but just somebody who he had loaned money to. And I went to get the money from him on one of my trips from Chicago to Detroit. And when I went to the address that was given to me, it didn't go well. It did not go well in terms of the asking for the money. I mean, this person went berserk in terms of how dare you and how dare he and all of that. Well, it surprised me because I wasn't prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And
You didn't really know the circumstances surrounding it.
I did not. Not at all. And this is a pivotal part of, honest to God, this is a pivotal part, Pastor, of how I ended up going from pastor to robbing a bank. And I know it's crazy, yeah, but this is what happened. So I got back to Chicago and I called and I said, hey, man, you know, this person did and said and went off on me. And well, what's going on, man? I said, you know, I didn't expect that. And then they went off regarding it. And man, I'm trying to be respectful here, man, and not get too much information. But let me try to condense it. So I ended up in the end, and they asked me a question, Pastor. Do I know anybody who can get my money? And I knew what that means because, remember, I was in Detroit, and I know what putting the vice grip on somebody. Can you get my money? Almost like by any means necessary. And I said, no, man, I don't know anybody who do that. I've been out of the streets. Yeah, but you're from Detroit. I said, yeah. And you got relatives? I said, yeah, but I don't know anybody who do that, man, really. And so we dropped it. We dropped it, Pastor. I get back to Chicago. And I don't know how long in between that, but maybe 2 weeks to a month later, I'm at a restaurant, we call them greasy spoon restaurant. That's a term in South, meaning the food is off the chain, but yeah, yeah. You know, it ain't healthy for you. It could be fried chicken, it could be whatever, but they know what they're doing. There was a taco stand. I was there, man, in my car. I always had real nice cars, if you remember. And I'm sitting there, man, waiting for my order. Place is so small that you really can't have too many people wait. And I'm sitting there and a guy comes by, looks at my car, and he says, man, that's a nice ride, man. I have a music playing and just waiting, chilling. I was dressed up. And he says, but he thought that I was a drug dealer. Mm-hmm. Are you with me? And at that time I had a beeper on and we didn't have cell phones, but you know, you the doctor or a busy guy or a businessman or a drug dealer with a beeper. And I'm trying to make story. He said, man, he spoke a brother up, man. I said, man, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, I'm not in that lifestyle. And he said, yeah, I bet. He said, but I'm telling you, man, he said, I do it all, man. I do it all. That's what he said to me. I said, well, man, you know, whatever. About a month after that, Doc, I meet the same guy at another greasy spoon restaurant. That is miles away from that restaurant, Pastor. And now I'm in I had a Porsche. I owned a Porsche at that time. All legal money, faithful tithing to God. God had just blessed me. I used to own 3 or 4 homes. God had done wonderful things for me. And that's important because you realize I didn't have to rob a bank, but there's a reason why. Anyway, that's another story. But so I ended up, man, seeing him and same guy. He says, oh, no, man. Oh, no. Oh, no. And then he started cursing. He said, no, H, no, no, man, you got to put it in my phone. Come on, man, come on. Well, by this time, I'm thinking about what my friend said. Do you know anybody who can get my money, like, by any means necessary? So I didn't even know this guy, man. I just know that he had his name was Nuke, N-U-K-E, like nuclear war, like Nuke. That's what they call it, street name. And Pastor, I ended up, man, getting connected with this guy, long story short, and I ended up taking him to Detroit with me, Pastor. And when I took him to Detroit with me, I'm not even sure if I should say what ended up happening, but no death, but I can't, but all I know, I'll just say this, we ended up getting the money. Mm. And this brother took care of his business. Mm. I didn't expect him to do what he did. Mm. I'm just out all of the facts there.
Yeah.
But he did. But I certainly can't step in and intervene because we came there to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The money, man. And it worked. And after that, Pastor, two things happened. My friend, my mentor friend, asked me, he had other folk that owed him.
Okay.
Are you following me?
Surely.
And so I got this guy. Well, we got the first batch. Certainly we can get, and the other monies were, they were a lot. This other person owed him was no comparison to what else. So I ended up, Pastor, taking this guy, getting ready to take this guy around, man, to do the rest of the stuff. But then his relationship and mine began to sour.
Mm.
So I began to use my own money. You understand? I did get paid for the collection of the other funds, by the way. I did get paid. I didn't do it free. I got money, a percentage of whatever was collected. But now I'm feeling, Pastor, that, well, you know, I know this is wrong. And I'm treading on, you know, dangerous ground, but I'm not the one that's really, you know what I mean? He's handling his business.
Mm.
You know, I'm just reaping the benefits. And when we get to a certain point, we're gonna cut this off and it's all, oh, now you don't work like that with the devil, Doc. No. When you go down the aisle and marry him, you don't control when you get a divorce. So yeah, I accept when you say, I accept Jesus as Lord and Savior, deliver me, Lord Jesus. Otherwise, he calls the shots. So I ended up repacking. That's what I ended up doing, man. I ended up with getting hooked up with this guy. And then I started using my own funds, 10, 15, 20 grand, for him to go out in the streets, turn the money, bring it back to me, because you know what I'm saying? Because remember now, I'm trying to get out of the ministry. I'm trying to get enough money for me and my family to be able to leave, quote unquote, comfortably, and get out of all of this craziness that was going on in the conference.
Yeah.
And man, I got deep in that, Pastor. I got so deep in that to where in 6 months, 7 months, Pastor, I went from being a respectable pastor, not stealing, I wasn't perfect, but just regular honoring God. Man, now I was in a desperate situation. Mm-hmm.
Financial.
Partially financial, only because I had taken money out of my children's retirement, you know, my children's educational fund, retirement, in order to do this. I wasn't broke, but I was willing to step back.
But when you said you were in a desperate situation, what was the area of desperation?
Emotionally.
Okay.
Not financially. Emotionally.
Okay. You had gotten so far in to that kind of shenanigans, let me say, that mentally and emotionally, you could not find yourself getting out of it.
I could not. And then I could not find myself being in the ministry longer than I felt I could stand.
Yeah.
Secondly, I grew up dirt poor. And so you have the fear of poverty that's chasing you. You know what I mean? Sure. You're gonna lose it all, you know? And those pressures, man, culminated. In me ended up going down south. You know, somebody suggested that I go down south and invest in their cousin, okay, who was not doing something crazy. And he said, man, in a matter of a month, man, I'll have your money back. You know, month and a half, I'll have your money back. So I went out of the frying pan and jumped in the fire.
Mm. Mm. So the getting of the money, was it to pay back a debt or just for your own personal?
Personal.
Is that right?
Personal passion. I didn't owe anything on my cars. I think I owed a little bit on one car. No, Pastor.
Okay.
Money was not the issue. What drew me out was this. This gentleman, man, started making a promise. If you know anything about street life, you give somebody 10, they bring you 15 back, right? Oh, man, this is wonderful. This is working. Next time you give them 15, they bring you 12 back.
Okay.
Next time you give them 10, they bring 8 back.
Okay.
The time you give them something, they bring you $2,000 more than what you owe. So it's a cycle that's the devil luring you.
Yeah.
And one time, man, I gave some money and it didn't come back.
Yeah.
So, hey, Pastor, this brother, man, I confronted him. Now the streets are coming back out of me. I'm rusty, but the street, you're not going to play me like this, you know? Yeah. So I went out, man, and went into the streets because I wasn't in the streets. He was. I went out in the streets, Pastor, met with him. He got in my car, leaned back, man, like leaned back in the car in the seat. He pulled up his shirt and showed me his pistol. And he said, "So what you want to talk about?" Yeah, what you want to talk about?
Wow.
The next time I met him, I made sure I had mine.
Mm.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
And so, Pastor, and I know this sounds crazy, preacher. In my little Honda Accord,
mm-hmm.
and paid for it, wasn't but a couple years old, but I paid for it, man, almost cash, you know. And man, we in this car and he pulls his gun. No, I know, man, that he's gonna do something against me. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
I feel it. So, man, before he gets a jump on me, Pastor, I get a jump on him.
Mm.
And we are in my car, in my Honda Accord, shooting at each other. He's in the passenger seat. I'm in the driver's seat.
Literally,
we are shooting at each other. And he jumps out the car, and it's at night. He jumps out. I don't know how he found the handle, man. He jumps out the car, and then he runs behind the car and starts firing at me. Firing, man. Just unloads his gun, man. What, back window busted, man, in my car. I mean, I didn't know this, but later on when the guy fixed my car, he came and he said, "Man, what are you?" It was an Italian guy who owned a body shop. He said, "Man, what are you trying to do, man? You're trying to kill yourself faster." I said, "What do you mean?" Because I done made up some story as to what done happened to my car, right? I done made up some crazy story, some lie. And he says, "Well, come here, let me show you something, good pastor." And he says, so he puts his hands, man, in the back of the headrest. And he said, "Put your finger here, pastor."
Wow.
Put my finger there, pastor. And there's a bullet that's lodged right in the back of my headrest. Pastor, an inch higher or an inch lower, the bullet would have hit me in my head, but it would have popped me in the head, Pastor.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? When you're so far out there, Pastor, that's supposed to rock your world, right?
Yeah. It didn't.
It didn't.
Wow.
I'm a man, look here. I'm going out and getting my money. This cat, man, thinks he go just because I'm a pastor, he go, trying to use the right words, not use street words on the radio. Oh, yeah, he think he go, yeah. And I went right back out there, Pastor. Even the conference man tried to talk to me because they realized that something was different.
Mm.
Something was going on, man. And I parked my car that night. I parked my car, Pastor, at the conference office that night. And one of the conference officials, being nosy, no names called me into the office and said, what's going on with, you all right? And I said, "Yeah, I'm okay. And this happened and that happened. I came out and I found my car like this when I was in a restaurant. And there was a shootout with somebody on the streets and my car, I was just in the crossfire, but Pastor, I tell you, man,
there were gunshots. I mean, your car was shot up.
But shut up. I told you the guy jumped out.
Yeah. Okay.
I shot him. We were in the car shooting at each other. Mm-hmm. He did not shoot me, but I ended up hitting him.
Wow.
But he wasn't killed. But he was just wounded and he jumped out, man, and started shooting. Well, that night I took the car to the conference office.
Oh, I see. Okay.
At night, with the windows all out and, bullets in it. Because I'm gonna get it the next day and take it to the body shop.
Exactly right. I understand.
And that's when the conference official saw my car parked in the back and asked me about it before I was able to move it. And I just made up some stuff, man. But I was in a zone at that time, man.
Yeah.
I was in the zone, Pastor.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing, man. I thought you had gone down there to settle a debt, but in reality, you were going down there to kind of replenish.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Slow Mississippi. You know what I mean? Slow folk. They don't know nothing.
Yeah.
Say, man, come on down here, man. It's easy. It's easy pickings. I'll have you money back, man, in a couple months. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Them guys in Chicago, man, forget them guys, So somebody referred me to somebody down in Mississippi. Well, while down there, Pastor, that's when I ended up, that's where I ended up robbing the bank.
Okay.
But I had gotten so frustrated with everything because the same thing that happened in Chicago pretty much happened in Mississippi, okay? Mm-hmm. Put the money, got a little bit more back, put the money out again, didn't get it back. It was a lure, man, by the enemy. And next thing you know, man, I walked into a bank one day. And back in those days, after dark, you could not they wouldn't take anything over $20 bills. You remember, they wouldn't break money down, and debit cards weren't as popular at that time. Mm-hmm. So after 7 o'clock or something like that, or 8 o'clock, you had to bring exact cash to get your money. I'm sorry, exact cash to get your gas, or it had to be under. They weren't breaking $50 and $100 bills. Mm-hmm. So I went to the bank, man, to get some change from $200-$300 that I had in my pocket. And I walked into this bank, man, on the edge of town, Pastor, and I looked at this little small, quaint bank. Southern people, how you doing? May I help you? Young folk, man, 20, 21 years old, young, two tellers. And that's when the thought came to my mind, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this whole thing. I'm tired of the ministry. I'm tired of what I got myself into. I'm tired of faking it. I'm tired, man. And I made up my mind right then. It was a do or die, that in my mind. But let me give you a point, man, that folk, when I do tell my testimony, I always refer them back to this. Before I came into the church, me and a friend of mine in Detroit were going to, guess what? Rob a bank. Cased it. Back in those days, they didn't have all the plastic glass like they have in Chicago now. You can just jump over the counter, you know, and we cased it and we were going to rob a bank. I remember his mother was, I think, blind or deaf. I can't remember now, but she had a handicap and she needed something done. The only reason we didn't rob the bank is because she needed something done. And he said, man, we're going to have to do it another day. And I ended up either coming to my senses or whatever happened, and I never did it. But Pastor, The everything about robbing
planted. The seed was planted.
Never left my mind, Pastor.
Yeah.
So in Mississippi, it was like the devil, man, opened the book to the very same page that I had closed it on, even though I'd come to Christ and was born again and had gone to Oakwood, gone to Andrews, and passed the churches.
Oh, have mercy.
I'm telling you, Pastor.
Yeah.
You got to guard your mind, Pastor.
I know, man.
You never know.
Yeah. Now, once you robbed the bank, you were on your way back up this way. And tell us about what happened. The helicopters above, and what happened?
Well, I ended up, Pastor, going on the run for about 3 months, because they did not know who robbed the bank. And that's why I say this is a very short version of a long story. They didn't know. You know, I was this guy, had dark shades on, went in. They didn't know. But then somebody who I left my car with saw the picture on the front page of the newspaper. And though nobody else knew who I was, this person said, that's that guy from Chicago. But I had left my car down south. I did not drive my car, flew back up home, because I didn't know who could identify my car. That's used as a way car. And so I said, I'll come back to my car next week. Did, you know, no problem. Had this person, man, this mechanic or somebody to hold my car. And this person knew how I looked, you know, because it wasn't like he was a total stranger. Mm-hmm. But you know, he just said, man, that's that guy. And so he did not squeal on me, as it were, but he moved my car from his mechanic shop to way out in the woods somewhere. So now you got beautiful Volvo, you know, top of the line, you know, sunroof and all this, man, way out in the woods somewhere. And the Rangers, from what I understand, ended up knowing that it wasn't somebody out here hunting, you know, and it was an odd match. And they ended up doing their investigative work. And over the weeks, they traced down who the car belonged to, wanted to know whether or not there was any connection with the car and any crime. And then they wanted to know whether there was any connection between the car and a bank robbery, you know. And so one thing led to another. They went to the conference office, got my picture, asked them, you know, when have I last been to work? Can we see a picture of him? All that. Of course, they made the ID, and one thing led to another. And then they were hunting me, and now I'm wanted. Wanted.
Wow.
And find out later from an Adventist who was an FBI agent that Charlie Joe knew personally and baptized. And he had a high position as a trainer at the FBI Academy in DC, personally contacted me and asked me to turn myself in. And he said, you know, you're down as being armed and dangerous. And what that means is that if they catch you somewhere,
sure.
they're not going to hesitate to put you down.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? Because of the artillery that I had when I robbed a bank, they could tell what kind of weapons I had and legally I had. And so, man, after about 3 months of thinking it through and traveling here and there and going out to Arizona, man, to talk to my dad, you know, just I was just in a whirl, man. And finally, well, they had already gone to my house, man, and surrounded my house, and they went back, man. You know, whenever they came there and asked my wife about me, they would send people in the back in the alley just in case I was there. It was just wild, man. It was wild.
Wow.
So listen, let me tell you this. So I spoke to my wife, and I'll never forget this, man. I was at a church convocation down in Florida. I'm still a pastor now. And I got down there, man, I told my wife, I said, you know what? Let me tell you what I've done. That was a moment of truth. Are you with me? And I didn't know if the FBI agents were down at the convocation or not, but I took in the bathroom. My kids, man, were in the room playing. I said, hey, man, this was the hardest thing I'd have done. I robbed the bank.
Mm.
You know, I said, you know, whatever, man. And we went through that crying, dialoguing, what, you know, I knew you was not in a good space, but you would talk to me and all of this. And I would, she'd ask me, are you okay? Something ain't right with you. I'll get over it. Just pray for me. And I chose not to talk to anybody. I didn't feel like I could talk to anybody.
Sure, sure.
But ultimately, I realized that I did not take the opportunity to talk to anybody. I could have called you. We had a great relationship. I could have called Charlie.
Right.
But I, you know, I just had this image that, man, how can I tell anybody? So I told my wife, and she said, whatever you decide to do, because we still had money, and I'm from the bank. She said, if we leave the country, I'm with you. If you turn yourself in, I'm with you. Whatever, I'm with you. And so that was a determining factor of me turning my life in rather than taking my kids and leave the country.
Wow, that's amazing, Tony. Now give us some redemption, man. What happened? Yeah. Yeah, give us some redemption. Tell us.
Yeah, get some redemption in there, right? So gotta have a hallelujah chapter. So man, look, I do 9 years. Look, they sentenced me, Doc, to 12 years in prison, brother.
And it was in Mississippi?
In Mississippi.
Okay.
My
surrounded by a lot of racists?
Well, let me talk to you. My attorney was a white European Harvard graduate. And he was very straight with me, a smoking guy, chain smoking attorney, man. But he was very straight with me. He said, let me tell you something. He said, you came down here as a black guy. He said, I'm going to be straight with you. Down in Mississippi, trying to rob a bank, making these folk here, white folk, look bad. I'm telling you what he told me. Making these good old boys, he said, good old boys look bad. Plus, you go into a bank and you do what you do, and you got two young kids. One of them is a white kid, another was a black, white girl. He said, that don't do well with them, okay? You're not gonna make them look bad. He said, now normally, You with your no criminal background, your education, a pastor, 3 to 5 years. But I cannot get them to come off of trying to give you a 15-year sentence.
Mm.
But you said the crime normally only carries. I can't. They want to charge you for this. They want to charge you for the gun. That's an automatic 5 years. They want to charge you for aggravated. They want to charge you for saying, I got a bomb. They want to charge you for instilling fear. They want to charge you. And man, I ended up, man, with a 12-year sentence, Doc.
Mm.
And I got 9.5 on that. And whenever I went to prison, Doc, guys would tell me, these are guys who have been to prison, and I went to a federal prison. So you got drug lords, you've got folk who've been convicted on Wall Street, you've got your Murdochs, you've got, you know what I mean? You, those are the kind of people that are in the federal prison. You got kingpins from Colombia, you name it, man. Schemers, man. SNL savings and loans, folk who've robbed and stole from millions and billions of dollars. That's who you're rooming with. That's who could be celly, as we call them, man. But long story short, Pastor, he said they won't budge. So, man, I ended up, man, and when I got in prison, guys would say, man, what'd you do? How many banks did you rob? Who did you shoot? Was there a shootout? I said, no. He said, man, come on. They call me preacher in there, preacher. He said, man, come on, man. You had, I said, I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. And then they said, man, I run five banks. I ain't you know, whatever. So when I told them, I said, no, nah, man, I was down in Mississippi. I said, oh, okay. We understand.
Yeah, it made the difference.
Yeah, it made the difference, man. And I walked that thing down. And, man, I struggled with God because, man, I would say, man, to God, why so much time? You know, I mean, five, six, seven, brother, man, can see the end of the day, can save his family, save his marriage, whatever, whatever. And, man, that text kept coming to me. He who knew his master's will be beaten with many stripes.
Wow.
Boy, that text always resonated with me. But then the one man, when David had a choice as to how he wanted his punishment, whether in the hands of, you know what I mean, his enemies or in the hands of God, man, he took his choice. And I said, and God said, look, but I'm going to walk this thing down with you.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, man, he did. So went to prison, give him a time. Again, I tell you, I'm fast forwarding, man. Got out.
Tony, listen, let's stop here, man. Please. And let me do a part two with you. And let that part be the redemptive aspect in terms of how you came out and how things turned around for you and where you are right now. Man, this has been a tremendous, about an hour, just a little.
What, really? It's been that long? Wow.
Yeah, but man, I tell you, it's been amazing. And you know, you're to be commended for sharing with us and putting your heart out there to give us all of the information that I'm quite sure people have been wanting to know.
Yes, they have.
People have been wanting to know, and you have been willing to do that. And then I want that redemptive part to play out and have its time all by itself.
Yes, yes, that's wise, Pastor, because God says, I'll restore the years that the locust and the cankerworm has eaten. And he has done that,
and
man.
That he has done, without a doubt. Look at that smile on your face, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
I'm the peace and joy of Jesus. That's where that comes from. Again, thank you, Tony, man. We love you.
Yeah, you're more than welcome, man. Thank you for your friendship and the platform to be able to share.
Amen. God bless you, Tony.
There's a testimony on the back of it, for sure.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. We'll get back real soon with the second part. God bless you, man.
All right, man. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yes. Yeah.